And on today's Queercast, Mitchell Fain's back with me, and he does not remember what the frack happened on the last Queercast when he was talking with me. Luckily, we just continue talking like we didn't even talk before, and we discuss the new play that I am rehearsing about, well, you'll have to listen to see what it's about. It's historical, and it's a story you may or may not remember. And Mitchell discusses a few movie reviews of his own. And he was really jonesing for what was going on in America while he was coasting around the Mediterranean. What was his news source? And how are we seen? How are Americans perceived in the vast, vast other countries across the ocean? Well, I don't know if it'll be very surprising to you. It wasn't to me.
Windy City Queercast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Mitchell Fain.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
Listening to the Windy City Queercast. It's show number 234. I'm Amy Matheny.
And I'm Mitchell Fain.
You are. You're still here, but you're leaving.
I'm leaving again.
For the week.
Can we laugh
at that? Or the 2 weeks. Or the 3 weeks.
I just said my name like I'm Ted Baxter. I'm Ted Baxter.
I love Ted Baxter.
Oh, God bless him. He was brilliant.
God bless him.
I just watched a documentary about the Mary Tyler Moore Show the other day. It was really great.
You did?
Yes. But anyway, I am leaving again.
You are leaving again.
But just this is vacation.
This is your vacay, which we were talking about. Because we've only had you on one show since you got back in.
Yes.
I think you were high.
Well, I was so jet lagged. I didn't even know what day.
You were delirious.
I was delirious.
You were delirious.
Whoa. I don't even know what we talked about, to be honest with you. So if I repeat anything, you'll have to stop me.
You were so funny because you came downstairs after we recorded the show and you said, I have no clue what we talked about yesterday.
I really didn't. I mean, I think I had been home.
But it's recorded for history now.
Oh,
it's
God.
Archived for history.
Archival.
You and the pyramids.
How are you? You just started rehearsal.
I did just start rehearsal. I am rehearsing a play at American Theater Company called The People's Temple, which is based on the mass Jonestown suicide.
Oh, so it's a musical comedy?
It's a little skit, a little sketch comedy. Kind of what you were doing on the boat.
Yeah, exactly.
No, we just started. We're in the did the first week of rehearsals, and it's...
A first week? How many rehearsals have you had?
This is this week. We're in it the first week this week.
Oh, I see. You're in the first week. So you just started a couple of days ago.
Yeah, and it's pretty amazing because, I mean, most people I find under the age of 30 don't know much about the tragedy beyond don't drink the Kool-Aid.
Right.
And
the catchphrase.
And even today, it's shocking how many times that's used in popular culture. Yeah. It has been reduced to
it's
this
become
sentence.
A t-shirt as opposed to, right.
It has. And
it's like Che Guevara, right? It's like he's on t-shirts now without kids really understanding who or what he was. And while he was a revolutionary, he was kind of a fascist, but now he's a cool t-shirt. And it's the same thing with this, don't drink the Kool-Aid.
It's exactly the same, you know. I mean, it's really an ambitious project, but it's going to be 12 actors, 6 African-American actors, and 6 white actors. And we are trying to tell a part of the story of why these people became a part of the People's Temple, mm-hmm. how they got to Jonestown in Guyana, which is where they died. Mm-hmm. They had gone there to build a utopian society with their leader, Jim Jones, who was...
Can I plead ignorance and say that?
Yeah.
While I've always known that it happened in Jonestown /Guyana, I don't know where that is.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that, they flew to South America.
So it's in South America.
Yeah.
That's what I didn't know.
Yeah. And it's, it's amazing because they farmed over 900 people there within a week. They had enough money and enough power to fly 800 to 900 people there within a week.
So this play is about how that happened?
This play is about the very beginning, how Jim Jones started as a minister in Indiana. And then he moved based out of hearing that there was this town in California that was probably the safest place in America. This was a news story that was written in Esquire magazine. Wow. And Jim Jones decided to move his whole ministry there based on this.
And then to make it the least safe person.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. And then they went there. He took bus tours. He would have these bus tours, and they would go around the U.S. preaching, almost like we'd call Pentecostal tent services or whatever. And he would get people to join the temple. And what people don't know is that 70% of the people who died were African American.
I didn't know that.
And many of them were poor. Most of them, a big portion of them, really were socialists. They believed in what he was doing because he was building a socialist society. And you have to remember that this time period is it's really fascinating because it's post-Vietnam.
Right.
You know, we're talking about, well, not when he started, right. But I mean, Jonestown, the murder happened in November of 1978. So we're coming up to the 30th anniversary of this. And what people should know are there are still documents that are sequestered, like, or I don't know if that's the word, that are under lock and key by the CIA. They have still not released based on the suicide. But because a congressman was killed down there and several reporters, that's why the event happened. Some people had come down there to visit, without telling too much of the story, but some people had come down there to visit Congressman Ryan, and a couple of news journalists and a photographer had come down with what were called concerned citizens of families of Jonestown.
Because, and that's what sort of pushed his hand?
Yeah, that he was there. Jim Jones, obviously, at this point, had fallen into great delusion and a lot of speed, a lot of drugs. I mean, he was a speed freak.
I think, like a lot of people, most of my knowledge of it comes from the Tales of the Cities miniseries, the Armstead Maupin.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you know, because it deals, like, it's sort of like a fictionalized...
Yes, 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 yes.
I think a lot of my information about that comes from...
Yeah, from Tales of the City.
Yeah, from him.
Which is interesting. I had forgotten about that. But yeah, it does. It just connects in his stories. I mean, I think because it was such a Bay Area story, they had a People's Temple in San Francisco.
Well, remember, it was the flip side. I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, people talk about like the 60s and the Summer of Love and Flower Power. But the flip side of that was a lot of young people with holes in their soul looking for someone to tell them the way, whether it was Charles Manson or Timothy Leary. Not that Timothy Leary is Charles Manson, I don't mean to say that, but like people were just
a guru,
searching.
A leader.
You know, we went from like a culture, you know, the culture of the Eisenhower, and then smack, it became a youth culture. And young people of that time knew what the hell to do. And so they were looking, I think they were looking for something. So the flip side of that became all the drugs and the following of people who were quite mad.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, these were crazy people, really.
Well, I mean, I think Jim Jones was extremely charismatic, and the strange thing that we're trying to decide in working in these rehearsals is, where was the flip? Because he was a very charismatic, Pentecostal-type minister.
When you say minister, are you talking like
Jesus,
the whole thing?
He was a preacher, yeah. And then, but he was preaching about
socialism and taking care of our fellow man, of blacks and whites living together.
Right, I mean, these are not bad concepts.
These are not bad concepts. You hear some of his early speeches, and to me, it sounds a lot like Barack Obama and this movement
scary.
That he's got.
You know what? Don't you shouldn't say that on
no,
the
air. I don't mean that. I just want people to know that the people who signed up weren't crazy and dumb.
Right,
people who, you know, I mean, I think
just looking for somebody. People are just looking for an answer, whether it's
they're looking
it's
for
now
an answer. They're looking. They want an answer. They want to believe. They want change. It's this whole, you know, Obama movement, which I think is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not equating Obama with Jim Jones for any stretch of the imagination. I just mean what we as a society, what is our the deep, deep need in us?
Can I ask a shallow question?
I'm sure there are no shallow questions.
What did he look like?
He looked like Elvis, kind of. He was kind of a good-looking
guy. Good-looking?
I mean, well, a good-looking 1970s, long sideburns, thick black hair.
I'm getting an erection.
Oh, you're so bad. I mean, it's a... I mean, I don't think he's good-looking, but I'm a lesbian.
Right.
But
you are?
Yes.
What the hell am I doing here?
What the hell am I doing here? But, I mean, I guess he was a good-looking guy. I could probably show you pictures of him. He was sleeping with, obviously, a lot of women. He fathered a lot of children.
Isn't that always the way?
Yeah. But there became a moment where, and we were discussing this last night, where how does it go from him just not being one of these other super church ministers? And what happened and what he did that became radical is once he had people following them, they had sold a lot of their possessions to come and live with the People's Temple. They had these dormitories, and they were doing amazing work. They were feeding hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people, you know, daily on the streets of San Francisco. They were clothing people, and, you know, they were really doing good work. They had massive political power. I mean, you had Willie Brown and George Moscone and all of these huge, you know, political leaders of San Francisco of the 1970s who all knew he was, you know, he was a political maverick and maven. I mean, he could, like, get people.
A juggernaut.
There's a story that Rosalind Carter was coming to town, and they needed people to be at the rally, and within hours he had three buses full of people there.
Wow.
You know, he could mobilize for no money. And in politics, that's powerful.
So how's the I don't mean to interrupt.
Sorry, but I was just going to say the thing that switched was that he started saying, "I am God." And he started denouncing the
Bible.
That's
a problem.
But he would get people so frothed up in these services with healings and all this kind of stuff that he would just get them all, they were just ready. You know, they were just hopped up and celebrating. It's kind of like watching an Obama rally when he gets people going, that speech pattern and the
Stop
ministry.
Stop saying that.
I am not saying it. I'm just trying to say why I say that. Let
I know,
me tell you why
but
I say
gonna
that.
That's going to get taken out of context in some quote somewhere.
Oh, wow. Then I'll get some major publicity,
yes,
won't I?
Will.
Me and Paris Hilton.
Did you see that, by the way? Can
yes,
you talk about
I did.
That?
But I only use that because I want people to know what I'm starting to discover is these were not insane people.
Right.
They were people who wanted to believe.
Yeah.
They were following somebody. They knew some of this was full of crap, but they knew the greater good of what they were doing was good.
Mm-hmm.
And then they got down into the jungle and they got trapped.
Right.
And so it was not a mass suicide. It was a mass murder.
Right.
You know? You have young guys with guns surrounding you and a vat of cyanide Kool-Aid,
right?
And you're in the middle of jungle.
Yeah, what's your choice here?
And you just shot a their people have just shot a congressman. You know, what's the option?
Right,
here?
So, right. That's not right. That's not voluntary.
And these children, you know, didn't have any option. And I mean, there were choices that could be made throughout the whole thing. But I just am starting to have a capacity for understanding how lost people get lost.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not about them being dumb or ignorant or
crazy,
brainwashed.
Right.
You know, it's about them wanting to believe and then making certain choices, which we've all done, maybe in even just relationships. You know, you see you're with somebody and you go, huh, red flag, but I'm going to overlook that because they're so da-da-da-da-da, you know. And pretty soon you make that decision too many times.
I think
and
we
you're
do it every
stranded
day.
Without your passport in the jungle with people with Uzis surrounding you. Or machine guns surrounding you.
That will not be my vacation in Rhode Island.
I hope not.
Yeah, no, it will
Did you
not.
Want to talk about Paris before we talk about your vacation?
No.
Paris Hilton with her I'm Just Hot.
That was funny, though. Her response.
She's very funny.
I don't know who wrote it or if she... I don't know who did it, but it's so good.
What is the sexism of connecting everybody from Scarlett Johansson and now Paris Hilton to Obama? Like, would they be doing this with guy stars?
No,
they're
just trying to make him out to seem like a shallow celebrity.
But if Brad Pitt had written...
Obama,
an
or
email
Clooney.
Or Clooney or
which is why
Sean Penn.
Yeah, which is why I think Clooney has sort of come out because, you know, Clooney sort of avoids sort of, you know, he's a political guy, but he doesn't sort of just make sort of public support. But I think that he sort of come out for that reason. It's like, it's so much easier to sort of blow off Streisand or Scarlett Johansson.
Yeah.
Or something like that. It is sexism. It's absolute sexism.
It's absolute sexism. I can't think of one woman.
So I heard her response video. If you guys haven't seen it, you have to YouTube.
We'll link it. We'll link it in the show notes.
It's freaking funny.
Yeah. Do you want to tell people what it is, essentially?
Well, it's just that she sort of like accepts, she keeps calling him that old wrinkled guy, which is brilliant. I mean, I despise her and I suppose everything she stands for, but she won a little piece of me with this sort of response video to being sucked into this negative campaigning against Barack Obama, where McCain sort of equated his celebrity to Britney and Paris's celebrity.
Yeah.
He equated Obama. And so her response is basically like, yeah, if you guys want me to run for president, cool. And there's one point where she goes, first I have to check where the best place to get a tan is. And she looks in a book, she's like, Maui, loves it. And then she, and then she goes on to offer a very valid energy plan.
Energy plan?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then she's like, so...
Because she can afford to get it implemented.
And she becomes very lucid and very articulate, literally right in the camera. And then she's like, so if you guys want me in the White House, but I might paint it pink. I hope that's cool. It's really funny. Anyway, it was just super cute and unexpected from her.
Yeah.
But I'm going to Rhode Island tomorrow.
You are. I want to talk about that. Let's take a quick break.
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. We're going to tell you what's going on in the theater scene. And also, we're going to take you to the movies, because I haven't been to see a movie.
I've seen two movies that I want to talk about.
You have?
Yeah, three movies I want to talk about.
Tell me really quick.
Mamma Mia, Dark Knight, and this documentary called Chris and Dawn.
Oh, I heard about that.
Oh, my God.
We'll talk about that when you get back. Okay. Then we'll talk about Rhode Island.
Okay.
The ultimate feel-good musical is back, and better than ever. Don't miss your chance to have the time of your life at Mamma Mia. You can dance, you can jive, having the time of your life. Ooh, see that girl, watch that scene, in the dancing queen.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Culture Club.
Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of August 11th, 2008, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Don't miss the world premiere of Love in the Middle Ages at Village Players in Oak Park, a new musical comedy about baby boomers jumping back into the dating scene. Fun for couples or a big group. August 21st to September 21st. Call 866-764-1010 or go to villageplayers.org for tickets.
Powerful movement, mesmerizing imagery, and naked people on scaffolding doing Shakespeare. Don't miss Unsex Me Here, a stripped-down one-hour production of Macbeth, featuring performers as living canvases, costumed in projected textures and unique lighting, and even audience participation. Fridays and Saturdays at 11 o'clock at National Pastime Theater, 4139 North Broadway. Tickets are only $15. Visit thelivingcanvas.com.
For more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hey, this is Carson Kressley, and you're listening to the Windy City Queercast.
Let's go to the movies anyway and see.
I'm Richard Knight Jr. with another Night at the Movies Minute. Bottle Shock is a great little indie you shouldn't miss. It was scripted by director Randall Miller with his wife Jody Seven, and follows what led in 1976 to California's Napa Valley becoming known as a world-class maker of wines, thanks to a blind wine taste testing contest that pitted Napa Valley against the best that France had to offer. Alan Rickman plays Steven Spurrier, a fussy British owner of a failing wine shop in Paris, who creates the contest, hoping the results will put his store and himself on the map. Spurrier arrives in Napa and makes the acquaintance of Jim Barrett, played by Bill Pullman, a vineyard owner who is just about to go broke. Jim is skeptical of Spurrier, but his wayward hippie son, Beau, played by Chris Pine, the local chick magnet, and the much more adept Gustavo, Ugly Betty's Freddie Rodriguez, see the competition as a chance to put Napa on the map. There are plot complications galore, but this is basically a David versus Goliath story, a particularly satisfying one. When things go bad for the characters, as they inevitably do in these movies, that when they finally turn back around, it feels absolutely exhilarating. The movie is helped enormously by the performances of Rickman and Pullman in the leading roles and Pine as the young lead. He's fine, if not as memorable. His performance is hampered by his disfiguring shoulder-length blonde hippie wig. So patently fake. Too bad. Bottle Shock is a much more accessible movie than Sideways, the other quote-unquote wine movie that comes to mind as you watch it. The Bottle Shock is much less acidic in tone and more traditionally satisfying. In Merlot versus a Cabernet Sauvignon, in other words, fall, fall, fall. Because it's such a rewarding movie, it's tempting to trot out all the adjectives generally used to describe a good wine. Not being a connoisseur, I'll just say that it left me with a very pleasant buzz. Go ahead and set up the grape. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Not at the Movies Minute.
Are you isolating? Listening in the dark? Keeping yourself hidden away? Come out wherever you are. Come on out and post a comment. It's so easy. Just visit WindyCityQueerCast.com and post a comment on any show. We don't bite. We'd love to know you're listening. So visit WindyCityQueerCast.com and leave me a comment, please.
Over there, in the tank top and well-packed blue jeans, short black hair, tattoos and goatee, he looks kind of mean. Well, I don't mind, 'cause from his left side he's got hanging keys. He's just my kind, those leather bad boys bring me to my knees. Like he's built for sports. I'd like to swim in his shorts.
So tell me these movies. You've seen Dark Knight, which is on. I gotta go see Dark Knight at the IMAX, and I really, really
I didn't see it at
see
the
it.
IMAX, so it's a good movie theater, big and loud. I hate to be a naysayer, but I just didn't care.
Yeah.
It was about 25, maybe 30 minutes too long.
Hmm.
I think Heath Ledger is as good as everybody says he is.
You do.
Which is sort of freaky and depressing that that's his last performance, this evil, evil, crazy guy. But he's so good. I think all the acting's good. I think, thank God, they replaced Katie Holmes with Maggie Gyllenhaal. When is somebody going to give Maggie Gyllenhaal a real part?
Because Secretary. Have you ever seen Secretary?
I know, but that's like, what was that? Was like 8 years ago now.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like she works all the damn time.
Yeah, but she's always playing the girlfriend. And she's so good at taking that, like in Stranger Than Fiction, she's like the girl. And she just spins it into gold in which way most actors can't do. But it's like, she's so good.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, but I'll tell you who I hate. And it started with, I saw this movie on the plane called No Reservations. Have you seen this with Catherine Zeta-Jones and Aaron Eckhart?
You don't like Aaron Eckhart?
Oh my God, he's terrible. I never realized it.
He's so cute.
He's so good looking.
He's so my kind of guy.
Mine too.
Like,
he's
if
my
I
type.
Was gonna, if I was going to shtup a guy, like I like that Viggo Mortensen and Aaron Eckhart.
He's very
looking,
sexy.
Well, he was dirty, so, kind of rough, kind of.
No, don't get me wrong. No Reservations was a horrible movie with horrible dialogue. But at least Catherine Zeta-Jones made some sort of stab at it. He was terrible. And so when I watched Dark Knight, I could see the same tricks that he used in that. I thought it was terrible. I didn't love the movie. The first one I liked better, the one with the first Batman with Christian Bale, I liked better.
I love Christian Bale.
He's brilliant.
It makes me want to watch, every time I see him, I want to watch like Empire of the Sun again.
Oh,
one of the best movies of all
time. One of my
time.
Hardest like ugly cries at a movie was at the
really?
End of Empire of the Sun.
Oh,
he's so good. He's good in everything. And my only complaint about him in... I have two complaints about him in Dark Knight. The voice he uses when he's Batman so they don't recognize his voice is kind of comical.
Yeah.
I think the director should have sort of helped him find a better voice.
So when you hear his real accent, though, it's so thick.
Yeah, so thick.
I'm so surprised by those Australian
and then his
dudes.
Is he Australian or is he British?
Oh, I thought he was from Australia.
I have no idea.
I'm pretty sure he's
Australian.
He's
a foreigner.
He's a foreigner.
Y'all got chicken tenders? Anyway.
Y'all got chicken tenders?
Y'all got A1.
If you don't know what that is, you need to go back and listen to Mitchell's other podcast two shows ago.
But then the second thing is that there's not enough of him with his shirt off.
A Batman with his shirt off?
I mean.
Come on.
I'm paying $10 to see a movie, and I don't get to see Christian Bale with his shirt off. Come on. Anyway, so then...
And he's willing to, like, go there with his body, too. Did you see that machinist where he, like, lost all that weight? And he weighed, like, 110 pounds.
Yeah, and then he put it all back on because he's buff.
Yeah, he's a
And then everybody else has seen Mamma Mia, but, you know, I was...
Wait, before you go there, did you love how they shot Chicago?
Because I did. That broke my heart.
Brilliant.
It looks really...
Chris Nolan, I mean...
It looks really great, and it broke my heart because it was like, you know, I wish that I had been in it.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, you know, I was doing Sheer Madness downtown when they were filming it, and so I, you know...
How did people not see them exploding shit in the middle of...
They must have just done it in the middle
LaSalle
of the night.
LaSalle Street. Because but how would you be living there and not know they blew up a freaking something or other? I mean, they blew up stuff right
I
and left,
don't
right?
Know.
I haven't seen it yet.
It looked really cool, though.
So, Mamma Mia, I saw Everybody's my guilty pleasure. I haven't seen it. I really want to see it.
You know what? It's as dumb as it is. It's like eating a bag of gummy bears. Like, delicious.
I love eating gummy bears.
It looks so pretty, like, through the bag, all the different colors. But when it's gone, it's empty calories.
Yeah.
But
and it doesn't taste that good. But once you start eating them, you just kind of can't stop. Because you keep thinking it's going to taste good, so you eat the
but
other
every
flavor
once in a while, there's one
or the other color.
Every once in a while, there's a bite that's really delicious.
Yeah. God, it's so like a bag of gummy bears.
It is.
We worked that metaphor
all the way through. I loved it. I thought it was so dumb. Pierce Brosnan is not good, but everybody else is so good. Meryl Streep, Christine Baranski, and Julie Walters.
Yeah.
Just to watch them be best friends.
Yeah.
Worth the whole thing.
Oh, that's fun.
Loved it. So go see. I thought it was pure liquid joy. Dumb as, but it's like, you know, it's like in the tradition of like Grease. If you know, our generation, we love Grease, but if you actually watch it as a film, it's terrible. Terribly made, terribly
Grease.
Directed.
Yeah.
I mean, same thing with...
Well, I was like six.
Right. Same thing with Willy Wonka, really. I mean, I know we all have nostalgia for it, but watch it as a film.
I'm looking for
it's
my
terrible.
Pen and it's right in front of me.
It is right in front of you. But you still
Willy
love
Wonka?
It.
Willy Wonka? Yeah.
Still love it.
Johnny Depp one is not terrible.
No, I love the Johnny Depp one. And of course, you can't beat Gene Wilder. But what I'm saying is, like, sometimes it doesn't have to be a great film to be pure liquid delicious.
Yeah. So tell me, now, Chris and Dawn is
a documentary.
About Isherwood, right?
About Christopher Isherwood, the gay writer, very openly gay writer, whose sort of contemporaries or peers were W.H. Auden, who he grew up with, and Tennessee Williams, and he hung out with E.M. Forster. And when he was 49, he met this 18-year-old boy on the beach. And by the time, about a year later, I guess, they moved in together, and they were together to the end of Isherwood's life, which was literally like 40 years later.
Wow.
And so it's a, but Don Bacardi, who was the boy, is still alive.
He's a photographer, right?
He's a painter. He's a portraitist. And brilliant. And so it's a documentary about their relationship. It's not really a documentary about Isherwood and his career, though it's obviously mentioned his stuff and what he wrote and...
Such a May December, heavens to murder.
Crazy. And they just weathered it. And they just, you know, and you know, imagine being 19 and your new boyfriend is 30 years older than you, and his friends are the literary giants of his era. And you're 19 and really have nothing to offer except how cute you are and sweet. And so, you know, it's sort of about that and how they weathered that and how he found his own artistic voice and how Isherwood just adored him and helped him find his own artistic voice. And, how
this is your love story, isn't it? This is the love story you want to have happen.
Yeah, because you know I like the youngins.
I know you do.
Not illegal, but you know.
I think Mitchell.
But Amy,
like,
can I say this? Yes. Please reiterate this to the people listening that it's not just that I like the young ones. The young ones like me.
The young ones like you.
You've seen it, right?
I've seen it happen. So it's like absolutely like that sound that. You know, signals an animal to come toward it. It's crazy.
So it's
you
not,
must give off these pheromones.
Yes, it's two-sided. I mean, don't get me wrong. I would love to meet someone my own age, Stephen Ritter. But people my own age couldn't be less attracted to me. I kid you not, I am invisible. Because you know why? Because I still live too, like, a bohemian life. I don't care about having a house in Michigan, which I wouldn't get anyway. I'd get a house in Narragansett, Rhode Island. But I don't care about, I mean, I don't think about my 401k. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm thinking about those things. But I'm not obsessed with that, like, retirement, like the rest of the people my age. So a 25-year-old is so into the fact that, like, I'm leaving for 4 months and then I'm coming back and then we'll have a
that they can still have that life at any age.
Yeah, exactly.
They don't have to kind of...
So it's not just one side. So, yes.
It's your Peter Pan metaphor that I love about you. But, you know, it's interesting, too, because Steven Rader, who was just on the show last week and when you get back from Rhode Island, this magic is going to happen.
I know, my pretend boyfriend.
Your pretend boyfriend. Your podcasting. Your queercast boyfriend.
My queercast boyfriend, right. We only talk through your podcast.
That's right. Only through my podcast. The only relationship you even have. The only way of relating.
Yes, exactly.
Is through these little snippets. But he always says, you know, well, once you turn 35, you're invisible, Amy. Like, you are just, you become invisible.
For me, here's my caveat to that, because I become invisible to other 35-year-olds. I become incredibly visible to the 22 to 27-year-old crowd.
There
and
you
I don't
go.
Know why that's true.
Hmm.
I mean, I think by this point, Di has posted my picture at the pyramids on the website.
Yes.
So you can go check me out. I ain't a looker. Don't get me wrong. I got my charms.
You're adorable.
No, listen. I got my charms. I'm not saying I don't have my charms. But, you know, it's not like Brad Pitt walked in the room. So.
No, but you got that Stanley Tucci sexiness
thanks.
Going on.
I'll take that.
Yeah.
If Stanley Tucci and Alan Cummings had a baby.
Yes. That's exactly right.
Yes, that's me.
That's Mitchell Fain.
With a little bit of Woody Allen's neurosis.
Just a little.
So anyway, so
you're not smarmy like Woody.
No, thank
you. But you are genius like Woody.
Thank you. You're sweet. But anyway, this movie, Chris and Don, if you get a chance to see it, it's a small independent documentary. If you get a chance to see it in your local movie house.
I think it's touring a lot of the arts.
It's fantastic. And it gives, oh God, it's about being an artist, and it's about men, and it's about the boundaries of love, and it's about not judging love from the outside and not judging love from the inside. You know, Isherwood had thought for a second about what he was doing, really, and wasn't just in love with this beautiful, fabulous, warm, sweet boy, and vice versa, they wouldn't have been together for 40 years and changed each other's lives. And, you know, to watch Don Bacardi talk about taking care of Isherwood in his last days. I mean, there's even this amazing, I don't want to give it away, but there's even this amazing sequence where you see the sketches he did of Isherwood right after he died, like literally he died in their house, and he kept sketching because he would sketch Isherwood every day during this journey towards death. So he just, I mean, who of us
it so reminds
want
me
their...
of Leibowitz too, what she did, what Annie Leibowitz did with her with Susan Sontag.
Yes.
Obviously not the age difference or
no,
whatever.
But still, but... it's like it's a love story, and for those of us who are sometimes feeling the fringes of society, here's this relationship that lasted 40 years. They would go to Hollywood parties. They lived in LA, and just totally together. And there'd be other like closeted celebs that they had both fucked separately or together there. Who, you know,
that's the key, right? They had an open relationship.
Open, but they loved each other. That was their primary. And you know, they went through it. They went through it.
Yeah.
But they stayed together, and it's beautiful. And this guy's in his 70s, late 70s, and he's healthy as a horse. I'm going to Rhode Island, so my accent's
here you go.
On. He bikes everywhere. You see his beautiful work. And I don't know. Go see it if you can. It's just a little documentary. It's just wonderful. I loved it. I can't stop thinking about it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I loved it.
All right, we're going to break. We're going to do the news, and then we're going to come back because Mitchell's going to Rhode Island.
I am going
to catch up on what you do in Rhode Island.
What can't you do in Rhode Island?
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
While lesser men strapped on skates and played hockey, you don skin-tight leotards and a teeny cowboy hat and learn figure eights.
Going round and round.
You practiced and practiced. Hoping, knowing, someday, you'd be good enough to wear a giant puppet costume and skate in an ice show.
Welcome to the big time.
Skate perfectly and you're a crowd pleaser. Mess up and fall on your butt, and you're still a crowd pleaser.
Oh!
So crack open an ice cold Bud Light, oh Titan of the Tights. You may never wear a medal, but sequins are shiny too.
Mr. Professional Figure Skater.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is The Week in News. California teen Brandon McInerney, the 14-year-old boy charged as an adult for the February murder of classmate Lawrence King, pleaded not guilty to first-degree murder and a hate crime in court on August 7th. McInerney's attorneys want lesser charges for the teen. King, age 15, wore feminine clothing and makeup to school and was openly gay.
A recent survey of Massachusetts voters found that they support opening up gay marriage to out-of-state couples. Massachusetts Governor Deval Patrick recently signed legislation repealing an old law barring out-of-town gay and lesbian couples from tying the knot. Nearly 60% of voters agree with the governor's decision.
Canadians are saying no way to Reverend Fred Phelps' Westboro Baptist Church, known for protesting soldiers' funerals with signs reading, "God hates fags." The Kansas-based hate group was recently turned away from the border near Winnipeg. Canadian law lists Westboro as a hate group, and the government is allowed to deny such hate groups likely to break the law access to the country.
The National Center for Lesbian Rights recently filed a lawsuit on behalf of two former college basketball coaches. The complaint alleges that San Diego Mesa College former basketball coaches Kathy Bass and Lori Silpizo were unlawfully fired because of their sexual orientation and gender. The suit alleges that the two were terminated shortly after speaking out against unequal treatment of female coaches and athletes in an article that also identified the two as a lesbian couple.
The Commercial Closet recently honored several companies for being inclusive of GLBT people in their advertisements in their fourth annual Images and Advertising Awards. Levi's was honored for a commercial that had two endings, one where a man walks off with a female and another where he walks off with a male. Other winners included the dating website Chemistry.com for their advertisements that made fun of a competing dating site for excluding gays and lesbians.
Members of a gay and trans group have filed a discrimination complaint against the Rockefeller Center. On July 20th, the group was celebrating Columbia's Independence Day, beginning at Rockefeller Center, where guards, allegedly without reason, asked the group to leave the property. The group filed a complaint with the New York State Division of Human Rights, alleging discrimination based on sexual orientation and gender identity.
The National Stonewall Democrat announced that a historical number of over 350 GLBT delegates will be attending the upcoming Democratic National Convention in Denver, an increase of 27% since 2004. Democratic National Convention held in Boston.
Singer Clay Aiken is officially a daddy. The former Idol contestant recently welcomed the birth of a baby boy. Aiken artificially inseminated 50-year-old James Foster. That's a woman. The child, Parker Foster Aiken, was born in Aiken's North Carolina home.
And that's the Week in News, brought to you by Windy City Times.
Oh, yes, hello there. My name is Sanjay, and I am a big fan of your show. I would like to say I think good idea for Steven Rader, Tired Love is Otopa or Griffey would be either this, shut up, because he always say shut up, you know, or maybe friggin' brilliant, because he always say friggin' brilliant, because, you know, that what he say, but also that what he is. Amy and Steven, I love this show. It's so entertaining, so funny, you know. I am from the South, also I'm from South Bombay, so I can relate to your stories of the South. Thank you for entertaining me. I hope you have a good day, and Steven, I love you, buddy. Okay then, goodbye now.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. So now, wait, before we talk about Rhode Island, you were telling me that your news resources, since we just got our news, and we know you didn't hear the Queercast news,
no.
That your news resources were limited at
yes.
best.
Well, we either had like European, like BBC.
Which is great news.
Which is great news, but it wasn't.
Highly recommend the BBC, actually.
Absolutely, but it wasn't America specific. And I, you know, you sort of Jones, not that I don't want to know what's going on in the world, but, you know, this is a particularly interesting time to be in America with
right.
a horrible economy and gas prices and the presidential race. So, you know, I was sort of jonesing for what was going on in America. You know, I'm definitely one of those people who reads the newspaper every day,
right.
you know. And not just for the crosswords, but that
yes.
is the cherry on the cake.
Is it?
Oh, I do 5 crosswords puzzles a day, Amy.
A day?
You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
A day.
I've known you how long? 5?
5 a day.
When do you have time to do 5?
I do them really fast. That's so smarmy, but I do. I do the Sun Times because it has a New York Times, a patternless, and then an easy one. And then I do the Tribune, and I do the New York Times that day.
gosh, you just saved the Tribune for you.
Please do. I always do the crossword. I usually grab it from Starbucks from the when people throw away the paper.
There you go.
You know, in the little bin. Anyway, so the only news from America that was on this fakakta ship was Fox News. And I avoid, of course, Fox News like the plague, and that whole fair and balancing. I mean, I know I'm preaching to the choir on this queer cast, but like, that is so fucked up that it's so fucked up that they have the balls to call it fair and balanced. Because I've never watched it consistently before. Occasionally I'll watch like 5 minutes of Bill O'Reilly just to get pissed.
Yeah.
Some sort of righteous
indignation. Just to kind of get puffed up.
Yeah, just like work up a head of righteous indignation. But to watch it consistently, because it was always on and it was the only place to get. According to Fox News, if all you watch is Fox News, Obama is a joke.
Yeah.
Whose campaign is going down in flames as he attaches himself to radical, liberal, American-hating, queer-loving, radical, outrageous causes, and his wife is this anti-American shrew, and McCain is this quiet gladiator who will lead us into the next millennium. I mean, so in my head, I'm like, oh my God, this is horrible. You know, because that's all I was getting, and so you get brainwashed, and I was like, oh God, this is horrible. Brock, get it together. And, you know, just the attacks on him, it's so biased. And then I get back, and I'm like, oh, Obama's a fucking rock star. And he's sort of kicking ass. I mean, they're fairly close in the polls, but, like, it's all about... I mean, McCain's whole push right now is just to get attention.
Yeah.
And then, of course, at the very end of my time in Europe, Obama was there.
Oh, wow.
And people... I mean... Seriously, in Germany, he had a rally, and there were people, Germans, Europeans, in the audience with
American flags.
And I don't know who it was, some comedian, I'm not sure who it was, said, when was the last time you saw an American flag being waved that wasn't burning?
Yeah, in Europe.
I mean, these people are psyched. These people are psyched about Obama. The only hope we have of getting the rest of the world back on our side like we used to have, you know, to have the amity of the rest of the world, is to elect Barack Obama. That's what stranger after stranger after stranger after stranger in Europe told me.
Yeah.
They equate us with Bush. They hope that it's not true. They think they so want us to vote for Obama. They feel it's the only way that we're going to tell the rest of the world and tell them that we want change. Because if we elect McCain, the rest of the world, I mean, they can't stand us.
Do you and I remember when it was in the when Hillary and Barack were both running, and you know, we were both Hillary people, then you kind of turned over to Barack, mm-hmm. and then we were talking to people who were saying, well, but if it's Hillary, I'd probably vote for McCain, or if it's Barack, I might vote for McCain. Or do you understand that mentality at
all? I don't understand.
How could you flip that far?
Can I break it down to the two most base things? Can I really break it down? And I'm sure that you're going to get lots of mail about this. Sexism and racism. It's all comes down to, who do we hate more, women or blacks?
Yeah.
As a culture.
Yep.
Because you know what? I think you can interview some...
And we hate women more.
I think maybe we do.
Yeah.
God forbid you're a woman that powerful, because, you know, it's like that speech that Streisand gave at Harvard, right, about the words, like a man's a maverick, a woman's a ball buster, a man's a tough cookie, and a woman's a bitch.
Yeah.
You know? But still, with the black man... You can interview some guy in West Virginia on the street at the Walmart or something and say, would you vote for a black man? And, you know, he's going to say, well, if he's the right man for the job. Mm-hmm. But you know, you get that man into a voting booth and you ask white America. I mean, it's like, what is that old, Public Enemy, Fear of a Black Planet?
Oh, I don't know.
I think it was one of their albums, old school rap. And it's true, there is a fear of a black planet. I think there's a fear on white America's part that the blacks, quote unquote, are going to take over.
Yeah.
It's over. So that's why if Hillary supporters, if she didn't win, then they're going to go to McCain because he's white.
Yeah.
Right?
Maybe the rural voters who are voting for her, the more blue collar.
And if Barack supporters, if he didn't get it, they were going to go to McCain because he's a man.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, I hate to sound cynical, but I sort of feel like I don't know. I'm getting cynical. Is that all right?
No, it's fine.
I guess I'm just cynical about the world right now, and I think.
But we see, this is exactly what we were talking about in the beginning of the show. This is the whole Jonestown moment. This is that whole
people need something.
Temple moment. People need something. Is why I think it's so relevant that we're doing this play right now.
Yeah.
Because you can't write it off as like crazy people who want a movement. Can't. Because we were just talking about in our office the other day that somebody had like a spare space, kind of like what you live in mm-hmm. an apartment in their home, and they put it up on Craigslist, and they had, but their title was "People Coming to Work for Barack," and within minutes they had like 6 or 7 people who wanted that room and that bed, and so other people in the office were like, "Damn, I've got a guest bedroom. We should start." People are coming here from all over the world to help with this campaign.
People, you know, it's a movement, and I need. I guess for me, I guess this, I can only speak personally. I need my cynicism to be. I just feel like as we move as a culture towards mediocrity, you know, I think we just aspire to mediocrity now, you know, the Hills and mm-hmm. Britney Spears. And our culture is so mediocre. Mediocre, sorry. The mediocrity of our culture is just pervasive. And so now I want us to aspire higher. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if we have it in us anymore. Mm-hmm. I mean, we spend our time. And I'm sure this is true of people who listen to the podcast too. We surround ourselves with like-minded people, you know, people who aren't sexist or aren't racist or aren't homophobic, who aspire to bigger and higher things and are constantly learning. And I don't think that that's necessarily true of the mm-hmm. rest of our country. And I'm not saying.
And what's going to shake them up?
That's like, what I'm saying.
How do you wake people up?
Then shit starts to taste good.
Yeah. It's like the thing that, what is that statement of like, if you spend too much time in the monkey cage, you don't smell the poop? Like,
that's
it's
exactly
like,
what
is
I'm
that what
saying.
It is? It's like, yeah.
I don't know, and I think this is it. I mean, I think I had this, obviously, this unbelievable opportunity that most people don't have to go to many, many places in the world just recently. And to hear, I don't want to come across as like, I hate America. But I also, you know, I'm not sort of a blind patriot either. Like, I love living in America. I'm glad I live here, you know. I couldn't wait to get back. But we need to wisen up.
And we could learn from other countries.
Yes.
Like, why are
older
we so...
countries.
Well,
because we're fucking cowboys, right? Because we have this manifest destiny cowboy, jump on your horse and kill anybody in your way to get
it. Yeah, so, but it's all like what Stephen Rayer and I were talking about when we were high on Cold Stone Creamery on our show last week.
Oh, you got sugar highs, right?
Yes. When I presented, and it was just in the last show, I think, about, you know, how much billions of profits in the last quarter ExxonMobil made.
Oh.
And, you know, it just takes me back to saying, you know, this is less about cowboy. This is really about some rich people getting really rich. And
I mean that cowboy mentality where it's sort of like,
and we're like
the more
butt
macho
boys.
You and you just take whatever you want.
Yeah.
And
it's just sad because it is a game and there are other countries in on it.
It's just unbelievable how much the respect for our country. I mean, when I would talk to older people in Spain, like some mm-hmm. older lady who owned a restaurant, and she would talk about how much she used to just worship American culture, and now she's just, she can't even pay attention because she's so saddened and disappointed by it. And this was not a woman with a political agenda. This was just a beautiful, senior citizen in Spain who had grown up sort of like, you know, with America as like this idea of like freedom and culture and
the pursuit of
achieving
and
growing
anything's
possible.
And dreams and
now they're not so much.
Oh, okay, we're gonna have to wrap this one up. We're gonna talk about Rhode Island next. We'll record here in a couple of days. We'll talk about Rhode Island right before you leave. Let's do that.
Perfect.
All right.
Perfect.
Because I mean, we got off on a soapbox that we obviously need to get out there.
Also, I'm trying to keep Rhode Island a secret. The best thing about Rhode Island is that it's the best kept secret in New England. But
well, then the secret will be, will we talk about it in the next show?
Okay, that'll be the secret.
That'll be the secret. Ah, how exciting! And cowboys. I have some cowboys on the show.
Oh, right.
I have a cowboy.
Yeah, I just
talking about cowboys.
I just worked with a guy whose family's like old school rodeo family.
Well, that's on the next show.
Fantastic.
So you'll be on it with me.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming. Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, Amy Wooten, news editor, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.